If enough people agree that it has value, then it does.
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing world changers in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces. If you like what you hear on this episode, you're going to want to check out the bonus mini episode you can access if you become a member of My Coffee Club. If you do, you'll get access to bonus episodes, new art, new writing, and other fun benefits at buymeacoffee.com/IsoldeT. See the show notes for more details. And now, let's get on with the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super happy that you're here, and I'm thrilled to have someone who's going to really educate me along with you in something that I'm very curious about, but don't know a whole lot about. Check this out. And you know what? I didn't actually ask you, Mike. Tell me now before I introduce you, how do you say your name?
It's Michael Bummer.
Michael Bummer. Okay. See, he's got a couple of different ways that he goes. So I wanted to make sure. So let me tell you about Michael Bummer. This is so cool. He's considered himself a tech geek since the mid 90s. He assembled his own computers and was the first person that he knew to build a website. Woohoo. He almost invested $5,000 in crypto in 2017, and it would be worth over $100,000 today. He spent the last 3 years watching crypto from the sidelines. And then when he and his colleague slash partner in crime, Naz, dug deep into the fundamentals and history of what cryptocurrency is, his mind was blown with the potential. All of a sudden, it made just a ton of sense. He realized that he couldn't stay on the sidelines any longer and watch everyone else profit. So he says that while he might have missed out on the first 8 years, he's not missing out on the next 80. Mike, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And Naz wishes he could be here, but we're gonna get into some amazing topics today, you and I.
I'm so excited. So first of all, I know that you are the co-founder of Crypto Dads Investing, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But I want you to, if you don't mind, take me, imagine I'm maybe 5 years old, and tell me what crypto is.
Cryptocurrency is an asset. Whether you're holding a seashell and you're 5 years old and your best friend wants that seashell, and in turn, they have a gummy bear, you give them that seashell, they give you a gummy bear, and both parties are happy, right? That's how currency started back before in the caveman days. Mm-hmm. And that has since evolved into things like dollars and silver and gold and credit cards and all kinds of other things that we consider and use as currency. Most people think of currency as US dollars. But around the world, US dollars are very popular, but there are many different currencies. And cryptocurrency, in its simplest form, is an asset. It is like a property, the same way that a silver coin is property. You can own that. You can trade it. It goes up or down in value, depending on how much people want it. And cryptocurrency is the same, but it has one other element to it, similar to the way credit cards and banking systems are done. It's also a technology that is changing the world.
Okay. Thank you for that. And here's the thing that I'm wondering about, right? You said it's a technology that's changing the world, which is cool. And I want to come back to that. But you're saying that cryptocurrency is just another currency like a silver coin. And yet, here's the thing that concerns me as someone who's just learning about it. If I look at the back of a dollar bill, it says that it's legal tender, right? Is cryptocurrency legal tender, especially since it looks like you can use it all over the world and every country has its own currency, every country has its own legal tender. So how does that get differentiated when you're talking about legal tender in the USA versus legal tender in, Argentina or Japan or Taiwan or somewhere like that? How do you do that? How does cryptocurrency get used as currency when everybody all over the world has their own currency?
That's a fantastic question, because let's just talk, for instance, about one of the most common cryptocurrencies, which is Bitcoin. It's mm-hmm. what most people have heard of. Bitcoin is legal tender in the country of El Salvador. So the same as your dollar bill has it written on the back, and it's passed in legislature that it is legal tender in El Salvador and in places springing up all over the world. There was a city in Switzerland, I believe yesterday, that made Bitcoin legal tender. It is coming. And what's more important in what people should be asking who are, let's say, healthfully skeptical, is the dollar bill says legal tender on the back, but people should be asking themselves, what's that backed by? And I don't want to flip a question on you, because it's actually quite confusing to some people, because most people, I think, believe that the US dollar is backed by gold. Because we've heard that, you know, this mythical room in Fort Knox with a buckets of gold waiting to be shelled out if people go turn in their dollars. And I can tell everyone that in 1971, that became untrue.
Right.
And the US dollar is only backed by the faith and trust in the government. And without being anti-government or sounding anti-government, I can tell you that people might want to start questioning the faith and trust in the US dollar and in how the government is treating it, because we, meaning the United States Mint, printed 80% of the dollars that have ever existed in the last 23 months. So that equals inflation, because there is more money out there, and it can be printed as frankly, as much as the government wants to. So now you literally have prices skyrocketing, availability of these dollars going up, and the value of someone's dollar is inflating away, versus Bitcoin, what we're, you know, talking about, which is one of the most common and biggest cryptocurrency. It is a finite, limited supply. There will never be more than 21 million Bitcoins. They can't print more. It is a technology that is unhackable. It is encrypted. And without getting in, I don't want to go down the road of all the details of that, but if we shall ask and talk about it, I can explain how that works and how the technology works. But when comparing apples to apples, you have a currency that is the US dollar that is infinite, can be printed as much as anyone wants. It can be debased and made less worth, you know, worth less over time. Whereas in fact, the Bitcoin is the exact opposite. It's mathematically programmed to increase in value because it's also not quote unquote backed by anything, but in that way, it's the same as the dollar. It's backed by the faith that other people will see it as having value. And if history says anything to be true, and if the current environment of the world has anything to say about it, the value of Bitcoin is steadily rising year after year after year at an incredibly exciting rate.
I'm taking all that in because, yeah, to me, I completely understand that on very many levels, money is a social construct. It has value because we all agree that it has value. Whereas cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, for example, as you've been talking about, is what you're saying is that it has intrinsic value, or are you still kind of going, no, this is all an agreed upon, we all agree that this thing that lives in the internet somewhere has intrinsic value?
If enough people agree that it has value, then it does. And the only thing we have to go on is history. And you know, in 2013, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the numbers in front of me for those people who know the specific numbers, it was worth, one Bitcoin was worth about $200. Mm-hmm. In 2016, it was worth about, you know, $1,000. In 2018, it was worth about $6,000. Today, Bitcoin is worth $42,000. So, and less than 1% of the world has access to or owns any exposure to Bitcoin. And its value, even at that minuscule exposure, which is a very important point for your listeners, and why at Crypto Dads Investing, we talk about the fact that it's not too late. We are still so early with this technology. And I have a wonderful analogy that it might be time to discuss regarding, you know, transactional use of money and how cryptocurrency relates to transactions. You know, if you'd like, I can briefly share that
absolutely.
Analogy. Okay. So in the 1970s, you know, not even going back to seashells, and, you know, we joked about gummy bears and kids, but in the 1970s, 1980s, we probably know that, and we've seen it in movies, you know, the people used checks for transactions because people didn't carry around $5,000 or $20,000 or even hundreds of dollars. So they would write a check. And I'm sure that when checks were first used, there was someone who said, I can't believe that you're going to give me a piece of paper with a signature and some numbers on it. And that's going to be worth, you know, a car or a vehicle. That's crazy. And then in the 1980s and 1990s, I lived through my father saying, what do you mean? I swipe a card at a box that's in the grocery store and it gives me money. I'm going to carry my money. I don't trust this card and these computers that tell me how much money I have. I don't need an ATM machine and these credit cards. That's crazy. And then in the 2000s or, you know, 2010s, you have people sending money via PayPal and Venmo. And you have these people saying, well, that's crazy. I'm not going to give my bank information to my phone. And what if someone steals the money? And now you have people Venmoing, you know, multiple dozens of times a day and sending money and paying rent, paying for many, many goods with PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay. And guess what? In the 2020s, this is cryptocurrency. Welcome. It is arriving. We are in 2022. You are going to, and one of the main reasons is the technology continues to evolve. It is more secure. It is cheaper. It is faster than credit card, PayPal, Venmo. So what are the three things? What if you could make a technology or an improvement, what would you do to Venmo? If someone sends you $50 and you go to put it in your checking account, it says, do you want it immediately, but we'll charge you 10%? Or 5% or whatever it is, or do you want it in 3 days and there's no fee? Well, with cryptocurrency and with some of the major players that are solved this problem, there is a 0.0001 penny fee for a transaction that takes about 400 milliseconds and is backed up across a blockchain that is essentially unhackable. So these credit card fees, you know, for anyone who's a small business owner knows, or if you pay for goods at small businesses, you see the little sign that says credit card users pay an extra 3%. That's because the credit card, when you swipe it, has to go through 7 or 8 middlemen who all require a fraction of a percent to handle that money and secure it. With cryptocurrency payment systems, you literally will tap a button within 400 milliseconds. The money has arrived in the other location. It is more secure than anything that's available on the market today. And it costs a fraction of a fraction of a penny. You can't tell me that that's not attractive to the major players. And what we're excited about at Crypto Dads Investing is most people don't understand that. And that's what makes it an exciting investment right now, is because I'm explaining this to you. And I have to say, I feel excited for your listeners, because I was in a boat not too long ago where I didn't understand any of this. And the fact that less than 1% of the people in the world are understanding that this is happening all kind of in the back room, and all these transitions and technologies are being figured out, I feel lucky to be talking about it and to have realized it in the early part of 2022 and not in 2025, whenever all of this technology has improved and grown and blown up. Like I said, I might have missed it 5 years ago, but I'm not going to miss it the next 80.
Very cool. I appreciate you saying all of that. It's so interesting to me because you're mentioning things like you think I know what they are, and which is wonderful that you think I know what they are, but I'm going to step back a second and ask you, what is the blockchain? You said it's protected on the blockchain. What is the blockchain?
Blockchain, very simply put, is typically, like for Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies, It's a documentation system, like a ledger. You can imagine it as a history or a book of sorts, that all the transactions that occur that are encrypted in the cryptocurrency world. So if I send you a piece of Bitcoin, it gets recorded in a digital ledger that is public, by the way, not that everyone knows how to access it, but there are ways to publicly access all these transactions. They are duplicated hundreds, if not thousands of times, into a book that is spread across the entire internet so that it cannot be copied. It cannot be manipulated. It cannot be hacked, because the blockchain, that technology, which, imagine a little notebook whenever I send you a little piece of Bitcoin and it says your wallet address, which is like this 30-digit code. And then it says from my wallet address, which is another 30-digit code. That all happens, by the way, computers are amazing. It all happens seamlessly and frictionless. And it says that transaction occurred, and it duplicates it in a chain of information that cannot be hacked or altered. And it sends it to hundreds of computers to store that publicly, so that if any one computer or person tries to come in and say, no, you didn't send me that, you need to send it again, even if they changed one computer or hacked it, the other 700 would know that that was false and it would fix it. And that's why it's unhackable. Naz and I follow this stuff very closely for our customers so that they don't have to. And the computing power that it would take to hack a Bitcoin transaction is roughly a million times more computing power than currently exists in the world's fastest, most powerful computer. Because that data, it would have to hack like 1,200 different notebooks spread across the entire world and simultaneously change them all in the same way in the same spot. So that's our way of saying, at least for the foreseeable future, this is an extremely secure way, and very much unlike, you know, for people who are scared of working in these digital world, you got to ask yourself, do you have a bank password and login address? Because it, in that sense, having these online wallets or storing your money digitally, you're already doing it. If you have a Venmo password, if you have a bank password or do online banking, really it's no different than that, but the transactions are actually more secure in the crypto world.
For sure. It's interesting. I have so many questions. Yeah, I was one of the people whose account was hacked when the big OPM hack of a few years ago of the Office of Personnel Management for government employees. And, you know, and your information, just somebody just grabs it and they took something like 36 million people's information. And so it sounds to me like what you're saying, that at least right now with the technology we have right now, there is no secure way to hack this very secure, I don't even know what to call it, I guess blockchain.
Which, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So,
yes,
so
there's no way to hack it. You can always, there's always going to be, the word hack is a bit misleading, because if someone steals your password and login address and takes your money, some people consider that a hack. And I couldn't argue that it is not, but that's more of a data breach mm-hmm. of sorts, or mm-hmm. a weakness, a security weakness, whereas actually going in and changing the blockchain isn't going to happen.
At least not, as you said, for the foreseeable future. So it's so interesting to me. But you also said 700 computers, lots of computing power. So that brings me naturally to the, where does the energy come from? Where, how do you pay for the blockchain? What is happening to work all of these computers? How is that all happening? And is that taking, I've read that it's taking a real toll on the environment in some ways, because it's such a huge energy output to be able to do these transactions.
It's a very fair question. I'm going to admit up front, and I love that we did not discuss all of these questions, but I know that there is good information available. And if we want to include it in the show notes or whatnot, I can find references to the fact that the impact on the environment is extremely overestimated. And in reality, especially as these technologies advance, they're incredibly green because of the improvements that are made. For instance, I can tell you that one Solana transaction, which is a cryptocurrency that we at CryptoDads Investing are interested in and like, it is a very efficient transactional cryptocurrency, almost akin to Visa because it can process so many transactions. One of those transactions takes about the energy of two Google searches. Now, don't ask me how you quantify the energy that goes into a Google search, but the fact that people do those things without even thinking about them, and that is such a minuscule amount of energy, the technology is aware of the energy requirements. And in fact, it's inherently important for these technologies to become more energy efficient because it'll increase their value. It'll increase their use. So there is a great public, you know, pressure to make them more energy efficient. But from what I can tell you, and I don't want to speak out of my knowledge base, the impact environmentally of cryptocurrency is extremely small compared to what some of the myths and numbers that have been quoted. I just don't know them well enough to tell you those details in this podcast.
I appreciate you saying that. I love it when people who don't know say they don't know. It's because otherwise, you know, you're going, well, I'm going to talk out of my hat right now. And I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a fair amount of research on this myself in preparation for talking with you, but also just in general, because I'm interested in it. And I have concerns about the fact that there's mining in China, and they talk about it as, you know, you're talking about it in terms of mining and minting, like minting an NFT. So these are very, I'm looking at it from as almost like a precious metal, if you will, that they're mining to get the energy to get this stuff energized so that you can actually make these transactions on the blockchain with these cryptocurrencies. And so I personally, as an environmentalist, am very concerned, but because I don't, I'll be, you know, full disclosure, I don't own cryptocurrency in part because of that, because I don't know exactly where my money's going. So when someone is skeptical like that, when they go, I don't know why I would want to buy Bitcoin because I have my credit, I have my money in my savings, I have, you know, money in stocks or whatever. What would be an enticement to someone to go, no, this is really something you want to do? Or are you in the business of not trying to convince the unconvincible? What is your thought on that?
Well, the unconvincible at some point, I believe in all walks, whether it's whatever topic it is, they have their own hurdles and thoughts that they bring to the table that they, it's only up for them to decide at what point they're open to hearing new information. But as far as cryptocurrency goes for the skeptic or for what someone might need to hear, what we tell people at CryptoDads is making sure that they understand Bitcoin and these crypto tokens are property. They're a digital property, a digital asset, much like gold. And everyone thinks of gold as a store of value. Bitcoin has been called digital gold, and there have been some critics of that. But as time moves forward, the writing we believe is on the wall that Bitcoin will become a store of value, much like if in the, again, I'm not a history major, but in the 1830s, if you were offered an opportunity to buy a block in downtown Manhattan in the United States in New York, and you had that opportunity, you would, in future you would say, yes, buy it. Whatever the going value is, buy it, because it's a limited amount of this extremely valuable asset. And you would then hold on to it and it would go up in value. Bitcoin, in the same way, is a digital property. Yes, it's hard to understand because it's a code and it's digital information and it is very mystical. I completely understand that. And it's a big hurdle for people to get over. But if you can think of it like a digital property and asset that is extremely rare. It is extremely divisible. So that's one thing, gold. You know, you can't carry gold around and give a little shaving for your trip to the beach. You can't. So there's ways that certain assets are better than others. Bitcoin satisfies many of the, it checks a lot of boxes in the column of being a very worthwhile long-term asset, in that it is finite. So it is rare. It is divisible down to, I don't know how many zeros, but that answer does exist. It is, relatively fast. It is increasing in value to the extent people are using it as a store of value. So if you choose not to become involved or not to own any Bitcoin, that's completely fine. I would never talk someone into it. It's this market, and cryptocurrency right now is a volatile market. The general going advice is that no one, especially without a license, like we are not licensed financial advisors, so that none of this is financial advice, but we believe the future for the owners of Bitcoin and other valuable cryptocurrencies is very bright, because people are valuing it more and more. So I would rather own it before it has a significant value. And then when it does continue to grow in value, you can then leverage that value. You can take, there's people who are taking loans against their crypto because the crypto has so much value. Lending institutions are aware that they'll give you cash to use because people don't even want to sell their Bitcoin. The numbers are staggering when you get into how many people, and most of the people who are buying Bitcoin right now are wealthy, but we believe it shouldn't just be for the wealthy, because why, against the whole divide of, the poor and wealthy, there should be more people getting involved in this, in our humble opinion, now, and striving towards working towards a solid, good investment in financial freedom. It's not just for millionaires. It's not just for people who understand the technology, but it's investable for everyone. A lot of people wouldn't even realize that you can buy $1 of Bitcoin.
Yeah. And go ahead.
It might be worth $42,000 as we speak, but because technology is a gift to the entire world, you can log on and we show you how, and you can buy $1 of Bitcoin. And if it goes up 10%, you have $1.10, or you can buy $10, or you can buy $100. And the reality is we're extremely fortunate to have that ability.
That's the thing that I don't quite understand. I'd love to know what the bottom of the barrel number is of the smallest amount of Bitcoin, I guess, you can own, because you said there's 21 million Bitcoins, which means it's finite. But if you can keep buying ever smaller increments of a single Bitcoin, then what is the bottom? And is it actually rare if you can keep just going, no, instead of buying 1 millionth of a Bitcoin, I'm going to buy 1/10 millionth of a Bitcoin? That, is there a bottom? Is it actually rare, or is it only rare because we are all sort of agreeing, yeah, there's only 21 million of them, and that makes it rare?
So Bitcoin can be divisible and divided into 8 decimal places. I'm not a mathematician, but it's able to be so carved up in the sense that owning it, again, if you think of gold, and if someone, there are many people around the world investing in gold, and you could argue, well, how do I own $100 of gold? That's not even it's not even the ring on my finger. Well, it's because computers have allowed us the technology to, and especially with digital currency, to own various amounts of an asset. And in the same way that you can own $5 of Amazon stock, it's really no different. And I can completely appreciate the hurdle, that people getting to the point where that makes sense to them. But what it really is exciting that there is that fractional ability to own Bitcoin. I can tell you that if people are finding it hard to believe they're going to pay 0.000024 Bitcoins for a coffee, they don't have to worry about that, because these other technologies that we're excited about, they kind of address that in the sense that Bitcoin, even though it's the largest asset, much like gold, there are other faster, more kind of efficient technologies and coins that will handle many of the transactional requirements. But what's funny, much like gold, Bitcoin will probably remain the store of value because of its technology and how secure it is, and the fact that it was the first to the game. It is the largest player in the space. So the other thing, and this kind of makes me remember that one of the scariest parts to me before I got started investing in cryptocurrency was realizing there are thousands, actually over 12,000 cryptocurrencies available, and it's growing every day. 95% of them will go bankrupt and will be worthless. And that 5%, what different people might call the blue chips, the pristine investments, those are where we like to invest our hard-earned dollars. And it's knowing which of those, and they're pretty easy to pick out. It's staying in the space of the good technology, the valuable assets. Whereas a lot of people, I think cryptocurrency and investing got a bad name because a lot of people are losing money on these extremely speculative, low cost, almost lottery ticket like coins. And that's scary. And you see people losing money, and it makes you want to stay away. We do not dabble in those lottery ticket cryptos.
That's reassuring. But let me, how do you know? Like, you do the research, but let's say someone who is a layperson in Nebraska would want to start looking at some of these cryptocurrencies. Where do you find out if it's, is it just do the research and watch a bunch of YouTube videos? Where do you find out that something is, like you said, good technology? Because I don't know, you know, sure. How would you know?
Well, you start just by, you could probably Google what are the top 10 cryptocurrencies. So, and they rank those, that metric is probably going to use market cap. Market cap is a bit of a scary word for someone who's never done investing or stock purchases, but market cap simply means the price of the coin by how many coins are available. Mm-hmm. And if you stay in the top 10 coins by market cap, that means in the 8 billion people that are in the world, of which I guess there are significantly fewer involved in cryptocurrency investing, but nonetheless, there are millions upon millions of people who would agree that those coins have value, much like the world would agree that companies like Tesla, Amazon, and Google, and other, you know, Boeing, that these companies have value, and there's a lot of money involved and invested in them. If you follow the investment size and amounts, that's probably the first part of where I would look. And if you invested only in these top five or top 10 cryptocurrencies, in our opinion, you'd probably be doing quite well. Now, there are intricacies, and just because a cryptocurrency has significant value doesn't mean that its value will continue to go up. There is no promise. Although that's where I would start. You asked about starting. That's where I would start. And then there is a wealth of information available to sort through, both in blog form, in YouTube videos, and in articles written by many different publications, Forbes, all extremely diverse publications across the world.
I'm taking all this in because there's so much. Yeah, here's the thing though. Like, if I'm looking to get involved, You brought up the stock market, Tesla. Tesla is a great example of a company that's wildly all over the place. There are days when it's, you know, $1,500 a share, and there are days when it's $400 a share. And those could be one day versus the next day, right? So Tesla is volatile. And, you know, you've said that of these 12,000 some odd types of cryptocurrency, that 95% of them are going to fail. So, and I'm not asking you to give financial advice, but I feel like if I'm looking at some of these, I've heard of like Solana, Ethereum, maybe OpenSea. I don't know if I'm saying any of these correctly, but all of those are they currencies? And is there enough, like, how do I put this? Okay, let me put it to you this way. So if you own Apple stock in the 90s, you were probably going, holy crap, I'm doomed. But if you held on to it when it was like $5 a share, it's split countless times, it's over $300 a share now, blah, blah, blah. So you would be a kajillionaire, right? But you would have to know that you could ride out those waves. And now over time, you see that on the whole, Apple stock has gone up. We don't have that much history of cryptocurrencies to find out these trends. So how do you, as a layperson, study these, besides going, what are the top 10 cryptocurrencies? Because there isn't a history here. It's so new. So on the one hand, early adopters might make a lot of money, but on the other hand, those early adopters would have to be pretty interested in being risk takers. What are your thoughts on that?
You summed up exactly why we're so excited about this investment opportunity in the moment that we're chatting right now.
Okay.
Because these assets are so poorly understood by the mass amount of people on our planet that we still believe it is so early that there are the types of scenarios that you played out with Apple in the 90s, where people were like, I don't know, I'm not sure what I should do. It went up 20% today. Should I sell? And the people who weren't in it for the long haul, who didn't see and understand what Apple's vision was or what Google's vision was, they didn't get and benefit from that 20x, 30x, 40x returns that the people who understood what the future held. Now, your question comes back, how do you know which cryptocurrency has a bright future? No one knows for sure, but I can tell you there are, much like the Apple, Google, Tesla signs on the wall, there are tells within each individual cryptocurrency that we believe have future merit. And that comes down to an established history, meaning it didn't just get created last week. It has a strong managing core. It was developed and founded by a company or a person that has a bright vision for the future and sees a use for it. Mm-hmm. The fact that there could be a use or is a use for helping solving a problem of sorts, helping transactions be faster, quicker, more efficient, more secure, cheaper, whatever it might be. The fact that some coins have no finite amount, meaning some coins are infinitely inflationary. Some coins will only ever have 1 million in supply. But each individual factor of that token, which is what you're buying, is a token of that technology. Each of those factors that I pointed out would kind of individually get a score, much like a stock would, much like you might score Apple. Again, these are not very different purchases than stocks. They're scary to people at this point, which is why it's still an exciting investment time. They're scary, but it's very similar to analyze these, similar to a stock. And if you see the company has a good leadership, a bright future, a good use case, what's the competition like? And then do you still, of course, we recommend diversifying within that, those blue chips, because what if one technology is kind of surpassed by another? You want to have diversification to some degree to be involved in multiple areas. But we also like to teach about how you don't have to be in 30 different cryptocurrencies, because we believe there's enough value in four or five, six of them that all serve a different purpose, have a bright future, have good leadership. And those are the factors that I believe would separate a coin from being very highly risky and more likely to, let's say, you know, fall flat or go bankrupt. I believe there are metrics, there are properties to these different technologies and tokens that reassure me and make me very excited, because you see more resources and people buying them, more people using them for transactions. And that gets exciting, because if in the future you see people are using silver coins to trade assets in worth, and then you kind of say, well, I'd like some silver coins, but I'm just going to hold on to them. And I think you brought up a really good point. I didn't want to forget to mention that if you're speculating or day trading with cryptocurrency, you're absolutely susceptible to some really volatile, scary losses or gains, I guess. But that isn't our approach. Our approach is seeing where the technology is going in 3, 5, 10 years and holding, because we believe the graph very positively and very excitingly is up and to the right, if you know what I mean. There's going to be a lot of sawtooths and up and downs, but in the long run, up and to the right is what we're most excited about. And we believe that cryptocurrency brings an opportunity that far exceeds how far up and to the right the stock market or the S&P 500 can go.
It's so interesting that you say that. And I, you know, the optimist in me wants to go, yay, of course, that's lovely. And yet sort of the realist and pessimist in me goes, don't ever invest anything that you are not prepared to lose, because for every Apple, there's a Braniff Airlines, right? So there's probably 10 Braniff Airlines who looked really promising and then tanked and the company died. So you have to look at it from that perspective, I would imagine. And yet there are people who are wildly speculatively doing things in cryptocurrency land that just boggles my brain. And I would like to switch topics for a second, and maybe we can just chat about this for the rest of our time together, to NFTs and what they are. And I always forget the guy's name who recently sold one of his NFTs for almost $70 million, which blows my mind. But can you talk a little bit about what this particular investment is and how it works? Because I'm going to be very honest with you. By the time this episode airs, I will be a newly minted NFT artist. And even though I'm not the one doing the minting, because I still don't understand how all of that works. But I have to say that even now I'm extraordinarily skeptical, because what is the difference between this NFT minted image, painting, whatever, and the JPEG, right? Because they're both digital assets. Only one of them you've said, oh, this holds this point on the blockchain. Why should I care? Huge question, I know. If you want to chop that up, I can, but I would love to hear your thoughts on all of this.
I'll do my best to answer what I know about NFTs. And NFT stands for non-fungible token. And it's really, simply put, a way for someone to, in a way, patent, or in terminology that they might understand, trademark or own a digital image or item. There have been, you know, songs or tweets or images or photos that have been minted as NFTs, non-fungible tokens. The reality is, when you then own the rights to that image, that's all you own. So you have this, it would be like holding the only copy of a painting. And if it's valuable and not someone else wants it, then that can be extremely valuable. If no one else cares and no one else wants it, then it can be extremely unvaluable, or it can be extremely worthless. And so the NFT world, as I've come to understand it, at least in its early stages over the past 12 months, is that it is a very significantly scarier space to try to play the different points of investment and try to make money, because there is also, it is extremely, even compared to cryptocurrency, it is extremely unregulated. And there are a lot of, we'll just call them shenanigans that people are doing to inflate value. And sure. I, again, I don't want to scare anyone who's really into this. And I hate to bring on criticism for those of you who may be doing quite well trading and bartering NFTs, but I know of a lot of significant stories where there is, you know, borderline criminal activity where people are buying their NFTs and with different wallet addresses to make them look valuable. And then the seventh or eighth buyer comes in and buys one for $5,000 because they just sold for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 the last time someone comes in and buys it for five. And then no one cares because the first four people who bought it were the same person with a different wallet address. And the world, and unless you believe that NFT has value, you know, someone sold a photo, I believe, of a tweet, the first tweet that was ever on Twitter. The owner of Twitter might have sold it or auctioned it off for charity. Something like along those lines. That might have value, and no one else can use that image without permission or of the owner of that image, which is now a non-fungible token. It's very abstract. And again, I don't want to speak out of turn too far beyond what I know about NFTs, but that's how I've understood them. And it's been, especially compared to what I now consider to be straightforward cryptocurrency investing, the NFT market can be brutal and very scary, and you have to be very careful.
I would agree with all of that. And it's interesting to me that, you know, for example, if I wanted to have a copy of that first tweet that Dorsey put up, I think it was Jack Dorsey put up, I just have to go find that tweet and screenshot it, right? So I can easily own a copy. What I would be owning is not that one piece on the blockchain that is slated to be this particular version of the tweet, but I could still have it. And that's the thing that I don't understand fundamentally about the blockchain. So if I look at it as a really skeptical person, which I'm not, I'm curious about the technology, but if I look at it as a purely skeptical person and I go, well, so what if that one thing is on the blockchain? I can still have it. I can screenshot it. I can download the JPEG. I can do any number of things if I want to have it. No, I'm not going to get the bragging rights of saying that I own the one Jack Dorsey sold. But what if I don't care about that? Like, what if I, as a woman in my 50s, go, this isn't something that I need to concern myself with. And yet other people are making, you know, making and losing, let's face it, kajillions of dollars here. So within this new technology, how do we know what the right moves are? Particularly if you're, you know, my mind isn't as flexible as it was when I was 25. I admit that. So if I'm sitting here and I'm going, I want to look at this new technology, how do I ultimately know that it isn't a bunch of bunk?
It has to be desirable. And it's only much like a trading card, Michael Jordan's rookie basketball card, or a Mona Lisa painting, or a Monet. We all have photos of them. You can go snap a picture of Michael Jordan's rookie card on Google Images right now. But there is only one person in the world. Well, they did print more than one of his rookie card, but you know what I mean? There are a finite number of people who actually hold a Monet painting. And the people that value that, who have the currency or assets that they want to hold that special painting, in the same way is the way I understand NFTs. It's not an area that I find to be investable because of the risk right now for me, but it can be as simply, I think, thought of as a Monet painting. And some people would give that immense value to say that they own it. They would display it. They will tell their friends about it. And other people will go to the mall and buy a photo of a Monet painting, and they will hang it up proudly and go about their day.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I feel like I don't quite get about NFTs, even though, as I said, by the time this episode airs, I am a newly minted NFT artist because mm-hmm. I participated in a thing to benefit the war effort in Ukraine. It's part of Women's History Month, but it's my proceeds are going to go to help the war effort in Ukraine. But the thing is, and exactly what you say, like there's a difference to me between the tangible Monet painting and a print of it. But there doesn't seem to be a fundamental difference between that image that Jack Dorsey minted into an NFT token and a screenshot of that. Like, yes, digitally, in some ways they're identical, except for that one that he auctioned off has a little tiny spot on the blockchain that's where it belongs. And somebody else's, you know, let's say he minted, I don't know, five of them. I don't really know any of that part, but he minted five. And now there are five people who have the bragging rights to say, hey, this is what I own. I own one of these five. On the other hand, and this is something, I don't know if you follow him, but Gary Vaynerchuk is doing just a ton of stuff with VFriends and the NFT world and cryptocurrency in general. Sorry, hold on. And one of the things that I think seems to be sort of happening is that he has this fervent community who are all very interested in owning his, you know, zealous zebra. He started drawing his own things and, you know, patient penguin or something like that. He's doing these drawings that then people are rapidly buying. And then immediately upon buying them, they sell them off as, you know, I'm going to raise the price on this and then I'm going to sell it because this is a Gary Vaynerchuk thing. So it seems to me like community in that way is very important. Having followers, having a community of people who want to support you is very important. Does that translate? And if so, how to cryptocurrency? Do you need anything like that in order to be able to be someone who participates in buying and selling cryptocurrency?
Not at all. Okay. I think that's one big differentiator. And to be honest, the example you painted with Gary Vaynerchuk doing that is exactly right. He has an audience. He has a captive following that will give value to his drawings of a giraffe. And frankly, because people want it, they're willing to trade it or buy it because of his name on it. Whereas in cryptocurrency, we can all download an app and much like buying, you know, $5 of Amazon stock, you can buy a dollar of Bitcoin and you can become involved in this revolution of technology without any significant, you don't have to know what a blockchain is. You don't have to understand how many transactions per second Solana does. And you can completely, if you believe there is an opportunity to invest money that you are comfortable investing, the same way you would invest in anything in this world, whether it's real estate or gold or dollars or stock, cryptocurrency or Bitcoin is no different. And you would choose that you want to give value to this item that you believe will be worth more in the future. And fortunately, unlike the NFT world, where there's a lot of research and knowledge and almost a barter, an auctioning of sorts that occurs, investment in cryptocurrency is as simple as downloading secure apps, the right apps, which we discuss at Crypto Dads, and knowing how to minimize the fees and safely, securely, confidently invest in these cryptocurrencies that are going to change the world. They are changing the world.
Yeah. And that's something that I'm very interested in, actually. I'd love to have you back because we haven't really talked about some of the real world applications of like smart contracts. And if you want to buy a house using cryptocurrency and all of that, there, it seems to me like those are emerging now, and in maybe 3 to 5 years, it's going to be a lot more the norm. What I don't understand, and maybe you can explain it to me, let's say you want to buy a house and you want to use crypto to buy it. Generally speaking, now you have to go through a lawyer, you have to sign all sorts of paperwork, da 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 da, and then the deed gets transferred. But apparently, from what I understand, eventually you're going to be able to just go, this is, you know, crypto, I've bought the house, we're good to go, I own the house. And yet you still, there are all of these, like, I keep seeing this sort of, oh, we're going to get rid of the middleman, if you will. But I keep seeing all of these things coming down sort of from on high that this is going to be possible. And yet there's an infrastructure in place that says you're going to have an inspection. You're going to have all of these things happen before you can buy and sell a house. So what will happen? Will all of that stuff go away? And I can imagine the government's going to be like, yeah, I want my pound of flesh on this. What are your thoughts on that?
I believe that the checks and balances of real estate purchases, just to stay within your example, will remain. A lot of those steps are in there to protect the consumer, protect the seller, the buyer. And home inspections and bank loans, there are signatures and agreements that will always be necessary to some degree. What will become much easier and has already happened earlier this week, someone in my LinkedIn feed bragged that they just bought a house in Florida using Ethereum. And they did that in a way which is extremely exciting because Ethereum is so fast. It is a smart contract platform, which again, you don't have to know how smart contracts work, but it's extremely similar to the blockchain. So the information is very secure, very fast, and highly accessible if needed in the future. And the transaction, the financial part of the transaction occurred across the blockchain. On both bookends, that Ethereum can be translated into fiat currency, which is, you know, US dollars in Florida. So it's not like the transaction just magically happened in this cryptocurrency world. But what happened is the family purchased Ethereum tokens. Mm-hmm. They sent these Ethereum tokens across the blockchain to the home seller. They received Ethereum tokens and then they can do whatever they want with them. The reason that that's special is that typically those transactions, as we know, anyone who's deposited a check and then you wait 5 days for the money to clear because the amount is over $10,000 or whatnot, this Ethereum transaction occurred within seconds. And it was completely secure. It was on public ledger. The smart contract existed and people had access to their money and could go about their way. So the amount of time and security that this technology brings to these high value transactions is so exciting. Oh, and let me share with you, because Naz, who unfortunately couldn't be with us today, has a real world use case scenario specifically in this realm, but more exciting and relevant to today's world with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So Naz owns some Bitcoin. He has family that are in the Ukraine right now and their bank systems have been shut down.
Right.
He sent his uncle some Bitcoin. And his uncle used and bartered with the Bitcoin to buy food, supplies, and actually ammunition. And he had no access to funds or money. And I got chills as I'm talking about this because this is the world we're living in. But that transaction occurred within seconds. Well, with Bitcoin, probably minutes. But there are the cryptocurrencies that are, like I said, more transactionally exciting, where it would be seconds. Minutes, though, for Bitcoin to get to Ukraine, instead of sending them a check, a wire would have required, how many people in the middle, how many fees, and access to that. Whereas the Bitcoin was there within minutes. And this is the type of technology that worldwide, imagine a united type of currency across the world where people know what they're earning, what they're holding and what it has value to others across the world. I mean, it is so exciting.
It certainly levels the playing field, it seems. And I think that is a fascinating idea, considering when we're talking about the developed world versus the developing world, people in the developing world having access to the same kind of currency that people in the developed world have. That is very exciting. And I, again, I'm wondering what's going to happen with regulation. How will they, the different governments of all the different countries in the world, go about regulating this? Because I'm going to imagine, again, bureaucracy is going to want its pound of flesh. How will they do that? Any thoughts on that?
I don't know specifically how they're going to do it, but they will try. That is a guarantee.
Yeah.
I can tell you historically, though, it hasn't worked out too well. So there are countries that have banned Bitcoin. One of them is Nigeria. The Bitcoin use, I don't know the metric again. I apologize because I know this is going on record. It's public. But Nigeria became one of the per capita highest amounts of Bitcoin ownership and usage within months after they banned it. China banned Bitcoin. It became one of the most sought after, like owned commodity in China. The funny thing is when you ban something, there's people that we follow and experts in the space who talk about it and in a way laugh, because when you ban something, think about prohibition. It instantly makes it so attractive. And you almost get the people wondering, well, why don't they want me to have it? It must be threatening to them. It must
for
be,
sure.
It must be something I really need and want. So yeah, the prohibition didn't work out too well in the United States in the 20s. And that's how we see the superfluous regulatory attempts at Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. The government is going to try to make their own digital currency. There's talk of it already. The problem is it loses all of its attractiveness if they can regulate it, if they can track you. China came out with their own digital currency and they track how people use it. Do you think anyone in the United States would want further? I mean, we're already everyone around the world is already skeptical and scared of devices like Alexa and our cell phones listening in, knowing what we're doing. Believe me, Bitcoin is a commercial for independence and freedom. And what's going on in Canada? Again, I don't know all the details right now, but Canada has recently, the government there has been trying to confiscate and take people's access to their money and funds away. You can't do that with Bitcoin. It is truly an independent, the government can't go in and take it away from people, and that scares them. And so that makes it more valuable. And I can tell you in the United States, there is both fear, but there are a lot of politicians, people who they got the memo, they see the future, and they're getting on board. I mean, just within the past 6 months, the mayors of New York and Miami took their paycheck in Bitcoin. I saw a recent tweet by Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank that he was in Washington, D.C., had a meeting with the legislature and walked out extremely optimistic and excited about the future of cryptocurrency after meeting with the legislature. And I think, again, these things are happening, guys, and we think it's so exciting to get involved now before people really understand it. I'm trying to help you understand it, and we love answering questions, but that's why it's so exciting. Imagine investing in Facebook and Google and Apple before people understood what they had. And that's what we think at Crypto Dads Investing, that we have that. We're learning. We're there now. And that is, it just makes me want to boil over with crazy excitement. You can probably hear it in my voice. I'm trying to contain myself.
I love it. I love it. I mean, this is one of those things that early adopters are also taking a lot of the risk, and that's something to be aware of. And of course, neither of us is, I'm not a certified financial planner. You're not a certified financial planner. We're not talking about it in that way. It's one of those things that I'm very, I'm both excited and leery of it, because I vacillate, if you will. But if people wanted to learn more about what you all are doing at Crypto Dads Investing, how would somebody find you? What's the best way to find you and Naz?
Simple. You can just go to cryptodadsinvesting.com. We have a free little giveaway where you can hop in and hop on our app that is both in the iOS Apple environment and the Android Google store. And inside our app, we give you an introduction to one of the lessons that we call Making Sense of Crypto for Beginners. And that's a little play on words, Making Sense of Crypto for Beginners. Uh-huh. And you can jump in and just learn about the basics of cryptocurrency, why we're so excited. And then we do deep dives within, essentially it's our launch pack. And I'm not afraid to admit it, but that's one of the products that we sell that is most popular is this quote unquote launch pack that we like to joke. It takes people from going, it takes people from being crypto curious to crypto crushing it. And you don't need a tech degree. You don't need to be a millionaire. And all you need is a little bit of interest and excitement about it. And we can help people save money on their fees, how learn how to get 5 to 10% interest on their cryptocurrency versus the banks giving away their greedy 0.1% interest on your money that sits with them. There are so many great opportunities. And all we do is help the regular person get involved because we were at that point once, not all that long ago, and we thought it was a great injustice. Once we figured it out, I knew that it had to be shared with other people because it's way too exciting to keep people scared. And then when it's too late, all of the exciting growth will be kind of like not gone, but it won't be as exciting. Like, let's do this now. Let's get financially free. We're crypto dads because we have young families. Naz has a daughter that is 1 year old. I have a daughter that's 8. And we want to plan for their future, for their education, for us to not have to work, you know, as hard as we work every day. And we see cryptocurrency investing as a pathway to that in a much more exciting way than the traditional stock market.
And I have to add, use at your own risk, right?
Yes.
So that's something that's really important to me. That we mention that this is, you know, I'm not a financial anything. You're not a financial anything in that way. I would hate to see somebody invest and do like what you said earlier, which is that day trading and then lose a lot of money and then go, well, you told me that no, that's not what this is. But it's important for us to point that out, that this is, you know, in many ways right now, for me, at least this is an intellectual exercise because it is an emerging technology and it is something that some people are doing really well on and some people have lost their shirt. So you need to approach everything with a healthy dose of skepticism and really educate yourself on how to do it, whether or not you go through Crypto Dads Investing or whether or not you do it through YouTube videos, whatever it is. I think it's important for us both to go, you need to know what you're doing. And if you don't know, you need to find out the information before you get into something that could end up having negative consequences in addition to some positive ones. So please be very careful about all of that stuff that you do. I think it's super important to say that.
I couldn't agree more. The general way of phrasing it in the crypto world is not to invest anything that you wouldn't be comfortable losing. Flat and simple, it could be lost. So rent money, food money, money that's supporting your family, it is not a good place to invest it in a volatile market if you're going to need it in the next 6 to 12 months. That said, there are obviously exciting opportunities. But yes, we are not providing financial advice. We are merely trying to educate. There's a terminology also called edutainment. And maybe that's what this podcast episode would almost qualify as, is education, entertainment about a space that is very exciting and may offer, and we believe offers, great opportunity.
Yeah, I again, absolutely. And always use at your own risk. I, you know, at the end of this episode, at the end of every episode, I go, this is for entertainment purposes only, though we can always hope, right? So that's an important thing for us to always talk about when we're talking about people's finances and goals and dreams for their lives and all of that. So I appreciate you saying that. I think don't invest anything you're not prepared to just lose, period. That, to me, that's how the stock market works too. I cannot ever invest anything that I am not fully prepared that if it went away, that I'd be just fine. And I am risk averse. What can I say? Mike, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here. This has been such a fascinating conversation as an introduction to cryptocurrency and a little bit we touched on NFTs. I'm super grateful to you for doing that. And I'm going to put your links in the show notes so that if somebody wants to get a hold of you and find out more about how you're doing what you're doing, they'll be able to do it that way. And so thank you for saying it because I believe people learn in different ways. So we're going to also have that link in the show notes. I have just one more question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. And it's a silly question, but I find that it can yield some profound results. And here it is. If you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
It's not too late.
Ta-da! No.
Could I explain that, or do I just have to leave it like the mic drop?
Yes, I think that was a good mic drop. It's never too late, absolutely. But no, please do explain it.
That is true about everything though, right? Whether it's about eating healthy, whether it's getting in shape, whether it's about saying I love you, or whether it's about cryptocurrency, it's not too late. And in the same way that the stock market has continued to grow, I believe that the crypto market will continue to grow. And for anyone who thinks just because they missed the 100x and 200x returns that it's now too late, I feel like I've learned and now convinced myself the overriding factor of what we like to talk about is it's not too late. And I say that lightly. And of course, knowing that with the asterisk of what you put on it, that we can't provide advice. And this is obviously a volatile market, but I believe, in my opinion, it's not too late.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate you joining me on the show and talking about this thing that so many of us, you said 1% is involved, and to go even further, only 5% of that 1% are women. So very few women in this space also looking at cryptocurrency. So this is a lot of my audience members are women. So if you're listening to this and you're a woman, you now are armed with a little bit more knowledge about how to get involved should you choose to do so. Thank you again, Mike, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Can I also mention along those lines that we, just because we're crypto dads investing, that means we're dads. We love women, and women absolutely need to be exposed to this opportunity. And so I want to just back that up, because you drove home a point that we don't want to confuse that this is only for men or dads. This is for anyone who has a curious nature in their body and wants to learn about crypto.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate it. And don't go away, because I have my little bonus questions that I want to ask you. And that is going to happen in a second. But until then, this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. And as always, I remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.